Now we'll move to the last case of the day, end of the week, number 024329, Paul Knox against Deborah Smith. Ms. Welch.
Good morning, Your Honor. Well, please, the court, I'm here on behalf of the defendant, parole officer Deborah Smith. This case presents two abstract questions of law, and it's really quite a simple case. The first question is whether, looking at the right, at the evidence in the light most favorable to Mr. Knox, whether he was able to make out a Fourth Amendment claim on Ms. Smith's warrant request for an AWOL warrant, and if so, whether Mr. Knox showed that the law was clearly established. Because the answer to both questions is no, either question is no, summary judgment for Ms. Smith, she was entitled to it. The first question is whether Mr. Knox made out a Fourth Amendment claim. To know this, we have to look first at what the standard for the Fourth Amendment is for Mr. Knox. It is not the standard applied to law-abiding citizens. Instead, it's the standard for parolees and probationers, which is just, at most, reasonable suspicion.
I wonder if we could just jump right to what Judge Shader was concerned about. He thought that a reasonable jury could think that Ms. Smith just lied when she said that she went to the house on the occasion of that May release and gave him the same instructions to call in every 2 hours because of all the difficulty with the telephone and everything. And he also thought that sort of on top of that, the absence of an AMS record when she had testified that this was the invariable procedure, and in my mind I drew an analogy to hospital records, you know, if people say they administered some medication and they never wrote it down in the hospital record, it sort of didn't happen. And I understood this AMS system to be more or less the same way, or at least that there was testimony that you could believe that. So you're not arguing that parole officers can just lie about instructions and then act on the basis of such a lie.
No, certainly not, Your Honor. The problem with Judge Shader's reasoning, with all due respect to Judge Shader, is that he thought that was the reason, the call-in instructions, with Mr. Knox's failure to comply with the call-in instructions was the ground for the warrant. And in fact, the AMS records themselves show that was not the ground, that the ground was that he was AWOL, that
he was absconding.
His whereabouts were unknown. And so even though earlier in the day, the person who had answered the phone at Mr. Knox's building had said, well, he's next door, call back in 5 minutes, he's over in his own apartment, suddenly at 1 o'clock, the answer changed. The answer was, I don't know where this guy is. And that is a parole violation. And once you have, that, you know, AMS paged Ms. Smith, said, we don't know, you know, the guy answered the phone, says suddenly now, he doesn't know where Mr. Knox is, and that was when she asked for the warrant, and it was for AWOL. It was not for not calling in. So regardless,
whatever disputes may occur about the calling in or not, even if she was lying about it, they're immaterial.
Correct, because there was an independent ground for the warrant. And because of this independent ground, then, yes, certainly there was reasonable suspicion. There was no reason to doubt the guy who had answered the phone because he had obviously had first-hand information about where Mr. Knox had been earlier. Suddenly that information changed. And so there was no indication that Ms. Smith doubted AMS or the guy who answered the phone.
Is it the brother that answered the phone, or do we know?
We believe that that's a reasonable inference because it was in his house, and he's the only guy that we know was there. But, you know, and there was no negating information. There was no evidence, and in fact, I mean, it's interesting that there's nothing in the record during his deposition that Mr. Knox said, well, actually, I was there. So, I mean, not that would have been material because she wouldn't have known that, but still, there's no dispute that AMS gave Ms. Smith information that Mr. Knox had absconded. And there's also no dispute as a matter of law that information is enough to warrant a warrant, to request a warrant. It's reasonable, it creates reasonable suspicion. Even if it hadn't created reasonable suspicion, even if it were a little bit less, and one could say that there was that he did make out in some way a Fourth Amendment violation, still qualified immunity, the second step of the qualified immunity analysis, then has to come into play. Did Mr. Smith show that the law was clearly established? Well, again, the standard... I'm sorry?
Mr. Knopf, you mean.
The standard, again, is at most reasonable suspicion. In Knight, the Supreme Court recently indicated that maybe suspicion wasn't even required for a search of a non-law-abiding citizen. And if that's true, I mean, that seems a bit extreme, but it may, you know, there's certainly a question raised as to how much information you need to request a warrant for an MSR violation. Also, under Illinois law, it's certain that you can request a warrant when there's an allegation of a violation. So the threshold is very, very low. Also, the other possibility is that there's a mistake. Ms. Smith was mistaken. Well, in fact, you know, the Supreme Court has said if you have a mistake but when you're asking for a warrant, you still get qualified immunity. So under any analysis here, it would appear that at the very least, Ms. Smith is entitled to qualified immunity because the law was not clearly established, or at best, that Ms. Smith was entitled to summary judgment because on the questions of law here, there's really no dispute. The last point I'd like to make is that Mr. Knox suggests that Ms. Smith had a duty to investigate for some reason when she had this information. But in fact, I mean, the court has held time and again, even for the police on a higher probable cause level, once you have probable cause, you don't have to go and investigate further. The investigation can stop there, and that's enough for a warrant. If there are no questions, I'd like to reserve my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm here representing the plaintiff's appellee, Paul Knox, and I'm here to ask the court today to affirm the district court's decision and allow Mr. Knox to proceed to trial on his remaining claim against Ms. Smith. I think the place that we have to start is before the qualified immunity analysis. The first thing we need to look at is in the circumstances of this case and based on the limitations that are placed on the appellate court's need to review the district court's factual determinations, we need to look at what exactly was encompassed by the district court's determination that there was a genuine issue of fact. The record is clear. I don't think anyone disputes that that the district court found that there was a genuine issue of fact regarding whether or not Ms. Smith made the post release visit in May and whether or not she gave the reporting instructions to Mr. Knox. The court found that there, as the court noted earlier, the district court found that that a jury could find that was in fact not true.
Is there a requirement that she make an in-person visit?
There is, I believe, a DOC requirement that she make an in-person
she
visit.
She had gone through this with him a while back, hadn't she?
She had. She had been his parole officer the previous month when he had been released, and she had made a personal visit. And the point is not even really so much that a personal visit is required as it is as the facts develop with respect to the situation in May, that the only way that Ms. Smith really could have reached a reasonable conclusion that Mr. Knox was AWOL was by making a personal visit.
But didn't he admit that back in some of his testimony that she had been there?
He did say that in some of his testimony. There were other places where he acknowledged that he was a little bit uncertain whether this occurred in
May
or
April.
That
doesn't really create a question of fact. If he says at one time she was there and she says she was there, how can that possibly be a question of fact on that issue?
There's a question of fact, A, because the record is unclear about what Mr. Knox was in fact remembering, whether he was thinking of May or April. But the major thing that creates a question of fact here is the absence of any AMS record showing that Ms. Smith had made the visit. Ms. Smith made it very clear in her
testimony. Judge Wood was referring.
I'm sorry?
That's what Judge Wood.
Right. Ms. Smith had made it very clear throughout this case that The DOC requires her to let AMS know about any contact she has with a parolee. She testified in several places that she always does that. And the AMS records for the earlier parole in April show that she did, in fact, report all the contacts that were discussed. Now, all of a sudden, in May, there is no record at all in AMS of her having visited Mr. Knox.
Ms. Welch has suggested that that's immaterial because of this 1 p.m. phone call that when AMS pages Ms. Smith and says, we can't find him, at which point she says, okay, that's enough to contact Mr. Walker and get that warrant issued. Why isn't that a fairly concrete fact that justifies the action that Mr. Knox is ultimately complaining about?
If you actually look at the AMS record, it shows that at 1 p.m. AMS had a conversation with a rude, belligerent man at the Knox home, and he sort of screamed at them, you know, I don't know where he is. They paged Ms. Smith. She called in at 1:15 approximately, and according to the AMS record, they told her that the man at the Knox home had been rude and belligerent. And that's all that the AMS record says that they told her. And she said, oh, this has happened a few times. He shouldn't have been released to this location. We need to page my supervisor to get a warrant.
So that record doesn't say anything about AMS's repeated efforts to get in touch with him unsuccessfully?
The record shows that AMS had made repeated attempts, but it also shows, first of all, that AMS was aware that this was not his phone number, that it was his brother's phone number, that he lived in a separate apartment.
So do we have the transcript of that part of the AMS conversation with Ms. Smith?
Or we do. It is... have it here somewhere. It is, my legal assistant has the fact files. Would you like me to have her actually pull it out so we can read it?
Well, I see, there's a reference in the district court's opinion at 1 p.m. May 29, AMS pages her, and then there's this K, that would be Knox, I guess, R-E-S-P, paragraph 46. Is that, would that trace it back for us?
No,
that sounds like your statement that it does filing.
It is. We can find it.
If it's in the record, we'll find it.
It is in the record, and it's on page 25 or 26 of the AMS records, which are an exhibit to both of the parties' briefs.
The warrant itself, did that recite a reason? Or did the application for the warrant?
The violation report said that the reason was that Mr. Knox had absconded and failed to call in as instructed. Now, there's another, it raises another interesting feature, I guess, of the facts. Ms. Smith has tried to make a major point of the fact that the district court's opinion was based on Mr. Knox's alleged failure to call and that perhaps he had never gotten those instructions, but that it didn't relate to whether or not he was AWOL. First of all, as we've discussed, and as I wish I could point you to the right page, it is unclear whether AMS in fact told Ms. Smith that he was AWOL. It's also unclear whether there is in fact a distinction between being AWOL and failing to call in as instructed. Ms. Smith testified at her deposition that she requested the warrant based on what she learned from AMS, that they had told her that he failed to call in, and she interpreted this to mean that he was AWOL. There's really no definition in the record of what exactly constitutes being AWOL. Does it mean you have to physically not be present at your home, or can it mean that you're not calling
in
to verify?
All she had to do was suspect that he was AWOL.
I'm sorry?
She just had to have a reasonable suspicion that he was AWOL.
She had to have a reasonable suspicion, but based on what she was learning from AMS and also based on what she knew from her past contacts with Mr. Knox, she
She knew that the phone call, the number that AMF was calling wasn't his phone. She knew that he didn't have a phone. She knew that he had a contentious relationship with his brother, who presumably was answering the phone. The inference of his brother says, "I have no idea where he is," to Ms. Smith, would not necessarily or even reasonably be that he really doesn't know where he is, that he's out of the house. It is more likely to mean he doesn't live in my half of the house.
The responsibility
alone
is that under this system, to provide a phone for a released inmate.
There, it's unclear under the system, and in fact, Melvin Walker testified that that's a serious problem when people are released from prison and told to be on electronic home monitoring and they don't have a telephone. One of the things he said was, what are you going to violate him for, being indigent? The fact is that before the April release, Ms. Smith had paid a visit to the Knox home, talked to his brother. He had said, yes, he would either give Paul access to his phone, you know, or would help him get a phone. It turned out that he did not do that. There was not another visit made in May to sort of re-clarify his willingness to do this for Mr. Knox. And it's actually the parole officer's responsibility in circumstances where the parolee can't comply with the requirements for electronic home monitoring to investigate other possibilities, other places where he can go to live, something else. Ms. Smith acknowledges that she didn't do any of these things. I wanted to go back for just a minute to the district court's finding of a genuine issue of fact. Even though it didn't directly address whether or not Mr. Knox had been AWOL, it clearly considered the entire record. It talked about Mr. Knox's alleged failure to comply with any requirements, not just the requirement to call in. And in view also of the confusion over whether AWOL is in fact different from failure to call, we could look at that finding as in fact encompassing everything. I see my time is up. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. You have 3 minutes, Ms. Welch.
Okay. First, to address Judge Wood's question, the records, the AMS records, are at document 34, which is the answer to our motion at Exhibit 8 at pages 28, or I think it's 27 through 29. A number of questions. Another one is who's responsible for getting the equipment. I think according to document 34 at Exhibit, document 32 at Exhibit N, which was part of our motion, which is the electronic home detention rules. The person on electronic home detention says, "I shall maintain the following: a working telephone in my home." So initially, at least, it's the parolee's responsibility. But then, if there is a problem, indigency. Initially, there had been agreement. The brother had said, "Yeah, you can use my phone," and then he bailed on that. So there was a problem that came up, and that's why they had the call-in instructions, which is the alternative when you don't have
a payphone.
Correct. When you don't have a working phone, there was a payphone across the street, I believe. It's also important to note that Ms. Smith, you know, when she first heard the reports from AMS that Mr. Knox wasn't available himself, that they hadn't contacted him, but as long as the person answering the phone, he kept saying he's around, there was no request for a warrant. It wasn't until the message to her changed. The message to her now was, "We don't know where he is." And that change, which she had no reason to doubt, makes this the reasonable suspicion that is sufficient for the warrant. With regard to, I think counsel said that AMS told Ms. Smith that the plaintiff did not call in. I think if you examine the records, it doesn't say that plaintiff didn't call in. It just says that you know, just reported what the guy who answered the phone says. He said, you know, he says he's next door. He says he's in an apartment. He says that he'll be there. So everybody knew that Mr. Knox was next door up until the time they didn't know this, and that was at 1 o'clock when AMS was told that for the first time that Mr. Knox's whereabouts were unknown. With regard to the violation report, which says Mr. Smith did not follow the calling instructions and absconded. So obviously these are two different things. AWOL doesn't mean both. It means away without leave. It's different from not following calling instructions.
So and also calling instructions in a situation where there is an operating telephone and you've got the electronic monitoring all set up. I read someplace in the brief that this every 2 hour system isn't the normal system, so that no one would draw a negative inference from a failure to call in. Whereas if you are supposed to call every 2 hours and you don't, then maybe you are AWOL.
Right.
I thought there was a factual relationship on these circumstances.
Right. I mean, it could be, right, it could be that if you're not calling in, then you're gone, right? But
right.
Here, I mean, that's a reasonable inference, but here there was actual information that he was gone. And the thing is, when you're on electronic monitoring, you don't have to call in because there's this automatic, there's a little box on the phone and there's an electric signal and it sends it automatically. It's only when you don't have the bracelet and the machine that you have to physically make a call in. I see my time is up. I just want to say that the violation report is dated the following day, so it doesn't really give the grounds for the warrant, which was issued on the 29th. The violation report's the 30th. We ask the court to reverse and instruct the court to enter summary judgment in Ms. Smith's favor. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. And having finished the call of the day, the court will now stand in recess until June 10th at 9:30.